Good afternoon and welcome. This is Cover to Cover, the book review show brought to you by Near FM, your community radio station on 90.3. I'm Joe Collins, and joining me in the studio today is Michael Sharp, our resident reviewer. Hello, Michael. How you doing?
Hi, Joe.
Michael's going to talk about two books, actually, today. He's going to talk about To Kill a Mockingbird, which is very much in the news at the moment. A lot happening there. And he's also going to talk about Liam Mills, Dublin author's new offering, The Fallen. Would we call it a period novel, The Fallen?
It's a historical novel, Fallen.
Around
the 1916 rebellion. It starts just in 1914, and then the main part of it is around the 1916 rebellion and a woman living at that time. But we'll get on to that.
I might just, as you said,
the first thing that's been in the news is a novel that was written 50 odd years ago, To Kill a Mockingbird, or not so much it, but its author, Harper Lee. Harper Lee, as The Observer last Sunday described her as, Harper Lee is perhaps the only writer for whom the phrase one-hit wonder has always been used in veneration rather than denigration.
Yeah, what a one-hit wonder it was, wasn't it?
She wrote the novel To Kill a Mockingbird. It was published in 1960. Apparently was told by her publisher, this might be of interest. We'd expect to sell a few hundred copies. It's set in the 1930s, America, in Alabama, in a small town in Alabama. And it's told through the eyes of a young girl, Scout, who is, but she ages between from 6 to 8 during the course of the novel. And she lives with her slightly elder brother, Jem, and their father, Atticus Finch, in this small town. The father is a lawyer, and he chooses to defend a black man who's been accused of rape, which, of course, in 1930s Alabama is a very strange thing.
Yeah.
And but To Kill a Mockingbird took off, and it sold not just the few hundred copies that the publisher said. It was published in 1960. In 1961, it won the 1961 Pulitzer Prize. It went on to be made into a film starring Gregory Peck.
Nominated
for various
iconic
Oscars,
movie, yes.
Won several, including Gregory Peck winning Best Actor, and it has remained one of the best-selling and most loved books of all time. I think it's now sold something like 40 million copies.
And that's a staggering amount of books, isn't it?
In 2006, there was the British Librarians movement says this is the book that every adult should read at least once in their lifetime.
Really?
it was very much a book of its time, in that it chimed with the burgeoning civil rights movement of the early 60s. But the interesting thing really was that Harper Lee, despite this huge success, never wrote another book.
Yes.
Apparently she just said she never wanted to. She had said all she wanted to say. And she grew old. As I said, she's now close to 90, living still in Alabama.
She never moved out of that environment,
never moved
did she,
out,
Michael?
And she had an older sister. She never married, never moved out. She had an older sister, some years or older than her, who was a lawyer, and who became quite protective of her. Harper Lee, as she got older, became almost reclusive. And the sister didn't allow anybody near her and sort of dealt with all her...
Funny, it was an older sister, I believe.
And the older sister, Alice, I think was her name, died last year at the age... I think she was 103. She was over 100.
Goodness.
Harper, as I said, is in her late 80s.
Yeah.
But Harper Lee had a stroke a few years ago. And she's now in a retirement home and is, by all accounts, partially blind and partially deaf.
Yes.
But since her sister died, her legal affairs were taken over by a younger lawyer who one day accidentally found another manuscript.
Right.
And showed it, apparently, to Harper Lee, and who said, I thought that had been lost years ago. I've forgotten about it. And it turned out that this manuscript was not, as they first thought, an early draft of To Kill a Mockingbird, but in fact was a separate book. And the story goes that this was the book that Harper Lee actually first wrote. Before she wrote it in the mid-50s, before To Kill a Mockingbird,
right.
Presented it to a publisher. And it was essentially about the same characters.
Was it a first draft, Michael?
Well, it wasn't really a draft. It was it was the same story, the same narrator, this woman who and talking about her father, who she was visiting, and this book was flashbacks to earlier times. The book was written in the '50s, and the publisher said to Harper Lee that they weren't going to publish this, but they thought that it might be interesting for her to try to write a book based on the viewpoint of the young girl, which she did. And this book became
the same story, Michael, was it? Yeah.
This became To Kill a Mockingbird, became hugely successful. But apparently now they say, oh, well, the other novel is a completely separate book, and we would be interested in publishing it now. Harper Lee apparently has acceded to this and said, okay. But some critics say this is people taking advantage of an old woman and just piggybacking on a very successful book and to make money. This new book is going to come out in July. It's called Go Set a Watchman. But it's raised so much publicity that it's already a number one bestseller on Amazon.
My goodness.
And they're planning a print run of 1 million copies. So there's a bit of a furore going on as to whether this is genuine or not, or whether Harper Lee is just being taken advantage of in her old age. Anyway, we'll see what the book is like. But that's To Kill a Mockingbird, of course, is one of the, as I said earlier, one of the great books of the
iconic American reads
of the 20th century. Anyway, that's Harper Lee, To Kill a Mockingbird.
Just while we're on the subject of American literature, Michael, who are the iconic writers in the States? Of, you know, the way we have sort of, I mean, the Brits have Dickens and, you know, of that sort of ilk.
Yeah, Americans probably came a bit late, I suppose.
The reason I asked that is because
You have Henry, you know, if you go back to the 19th century, I suppose, well, the late 19th century, yeah, you had Henry James and Edith Wharton.
In some reviews, I've often saw that the reviewers still say that you know, they're looking for that great American novel or that great American iconic American writer.
Well, there was always this thing about the great American novel. You know, who had written the great American novel, and you know, various people have claimed it, like Norman Mailer was regarding, you know, the Naked and the Dead, first book, the great American novel. People talk about J.D. Salinger, The Catcher in the Rye. I mean, you know, Joseph Heller's book, Catch 22, you know, all these great first novels that people wrote. And the great American novel, I mean, Irwin Shaw, who wrote, was it The Young Lions and other things like that, you know, these were great American novels of various times. And
it just seems to be one of the perplexities of a sort of a relatively young nation, you know.
Philip, you know, you had other authors, you know, Philip Roth, who's now, that they're now aging, but the young authors coming through all the time. Of course, Hemingway would be.
Back
in the 20s, 30s. And as I think, going back into the 19th century, you had Nathaniel Hawthorne or Hathorne.
Yeah, that's quite a collection of them, isn't it?
There's loads of them. Yeah. I don't claim to have read all of them. Over the years. But
The
other book, the book that I've been reading, or I've just finished reading, is
The Fallen, yeah.
Called Fallen.
Oh, Fallen, sorry. Yeah, I was just Fallen.
By a Dublin author, Leah Mills. Leah Mills, she's written various things, including two novels. And her last book, in fact, was not a novel. Her last book was written about 5-6 years ago. And it was called In Your Face. This was she had was diagnosed with oral cancer.
Oral cancer, yes, that's
and,
right.
And she wrote a book. Subsequently, I think she thankfully she came through it, and she wrote a book about that. But in last year, she returned to the novel form and wrote this book, Fallen. It's a historical novel. It's set well, mainly 1916. It starts in 1914. The main character is a young woman called Kate Crilly.
Yes.
Who is a young woman in a middle-class, well-to-do Dublin family of the time. Her father has a solicitor's practice. They live in what was then called Rutland Square. I think it's now Parnell Square. They live
right.
in Parnell Square. And in a a big house. She has two sisters, one of whom is married with a young daughter, and the other is almost engaged, or during the course of the book she becomes engaged. She also has two brothers. She's a twin brother, Liam, who, apart from the fact that they're twins, they're very close. And she has a young brother, the baby of the family, Matt, who Matt appears on and off in the story, whereas the others are sort of decidedly middle class. He wants to be an actor, and they tried to get him interested. His father tried to get him into the legal business. That didn't take.
Right.
Anyway, we don't learn a lot about Matt. But as I say, Kate is the main character. And the second main character, although he's not there for a lot of the time, is her twin brother, Liam.
Right.
When the story starts, it's 1914. Kate and Liam are both in their early 20s. They've both been to university, to UCD. Kate has done a degree in history. She's very good at this. She's done very well. And she is quite interested in going on to do a higher degree as her professor. But her parents sort of say, oh, no, particularly her mother. Where's the point in, doing this? So she decides that she's not going to do this, but she doesn't know what she is going to do.
Right.
Liam,
does her mother sort of distract her from the education because she is a woman
she's
a female?
I suppose at the time, what do young girls want to be doing getting
educated?
Anyway, Liam, as I said to him, she's very close as a twin. Liam, in 1914, the book starts in August or in late 1914. The First World War has just broken out. And Liam suddenly announces he's volunteered and he's going off to fight in the war. And Kate isn't terribly happy about this, but I mean, this is Liam's decision.
Right.
So off he goes, and soon they hear he's goes to training. Soon they hear he's gone to France. And then a lot of the story then begins to happen through Liam's letters back to her. And she detects his gradual disenchantment with what's happening, as has been evident in lots of other books.
Does the novel investigate or develop much the mindset of the young man prior to his
mindset.
The war?
It's very much her mindset,
right?
And it's her mindset throughout the book because, you get his mindset largely through his letters. I mean, you don't hear a lot about him growing up or anything like that, but you do get through his letters this disenchantment and turning off by the war. And then in April 1915, they get the news that he's been killed.
Yeah,
and this is obviously a horrendously difficult for her. But life goes on. By this stage, she's been at a bit of a loose end, wondering, when she didn't go on in college, what she was going to do.
Right.
And somewhat fortuitously, she gets temporary work, working for a woman who's writing a book about sculptures and statues in Dublin. And she needs a secretary to keep things together and keep the book on track and so on. So Kate gets a job, which isn't going to last forever. It's only going to be a temporary thing, but she's very happy and interested in doing this. And she gets to know this woman and her a cousin of hers. They live in Percy Place, which is just beside the canal.
Yes, the Grand Canal, on the south side there, near Baggot Street, isn't it?
Then April 1916 comes around. It's the first anniversary of Liam's death, and so she's thinking a lot about him. And she goes off with her niece, her sister's young daughter, to feed the ducks in Stephen's Green.
Sunday pastime.
And while they're there feeding the ducks, this man with a gun comes in and says, we're asking everybody to leave the park as we're taking it over and there could be some shooting.
Right.
And it's interesting in the way, this is the way that probably the 1916 rebellion happened, right, to ordinary people. You know, they were just ordinary people on an Easter Monday, a fine Easter Monday in Dublin.
Doing normal things.
Doing normal things like feeding the ducks in Stephen's Green, and suddenly this thing happens. And then you have the whole, the rest of the book then is the days of Easter week. And she's, she gets back to, that first night she gets back to her house in, as I said, but it's quite close to the GPO at O'Connell Street, or Sackville Street as it was. So they're advised that they have to get out.
And,
right. So she, Liam's, Liam was engaged. So Liam's fiancée says, well, come to our house. They live in on the south side in near Harvard Park. So they decamp, but she ends up, instead of going to this house, she goes to Percy Place, to the woman that she's been working for. And she spends most of Easter week there, overlooking the canal. And of course, as such, one of the big events of Easter week was what became known as the Battle of Mount Street Bridge, right, where 200 British soldiers, which had been brought into Dunleary to help, were marching in from Dunleary into town.
Yes.
And the rebels had taken over Clan William House, which is on the just on the building, it's no longer there, just on the town side of Mount Street Bridge.
Right.
And there was a battle there and quite a number of people killed. There was 200 soldiers marching in, and so they get a, from living in Percy Place or staying in Percy Place, they get a first hand view of this. She then goes out, tries to help around the hospitals, but the other part of the story is that a nephew of the woman that she is working for, Hubie Wilson, is staying in the house as well. He's a captain who fought in the war. He's come home because he's injured. He's lost half a hand.
Right.
But it, she knows of him because she knows of him through Liam, that he was serving with her brother.
Oh, these were associated or companions,
and in fact,
on the front.
She discovers that Liam, it was he who picked out Liam from his early training and sent him to France perhaps earlier, or, well, Liam wanted to go, so it wasn't that he was forced, but he ended up in France earlier than he might have been.
So,
to some extent, this man has some responsibility for his death, but he also is able to tell her a bit more about the circumstances in which Liam died, and this ties in with the letters that she has and Liam's disenchantment and horror at what's going on. And she's also trying to square various circles of, you know, her own feelings about Irishness and the usual thing that is sort of quite common in books around about 1916 of the paradox between being Irish and, you know, starting off from a premise of thinking, you know that you're part of the empire and fighting for Britain, but at the same time there's an Irish angle to it.
That conflict of fighting for your colonial master.
She meets Hubie Wilson, who's, you know, so she's in the house in Percy Place with him, and gradually, you know, a closeness between them develops.
He's a dub as well, is he?
Sorry?
Is Hubie a dub?
No, he's from the country. He's from somewhere outside Ireland, but he's
Irish.
He's always Irish, right, yeah. He's a captain. He was a captain in the army. So that's fallen. It's. I mean, has it's. If you're interested in historical novels, I mean, there've been a lot.
They grab your attention, Michael, as a read.
It reads very. She writes very, very well, and it reads very well. The only if I found a flaw with it, it begins to meander a bit. I found towards the end, and it sort of
right.
It. I mean, you could say, well, it doesn't go anywhere.
Is the language just? Is
no,
it convincing?
The language is quite easy to. Easy to read. Easy to read. There's nothing. She in a way it is part of the story because she's trying to trying to travel around the city, going in to help in the hospitals, and of course she doesn't really have any expertise, and her elder sister is in hospital and quite ill, and she's going to visit her and then being pressed into service doing bits and pieces of things, and gradually this relationship with Hubie is growing.
She falls in love with Hubie, doesn't she?
They fall in love, essentially. And but what's going to happen to them after the war is not entirely certain. There are hints that that they have both decided that they're going to make a complete new start, and they may just up and leave Ireland, Dublin completely. But in a way, it doesn't, there's no absolute final conclusion, which might be seen as a weakness in that the story meanders a bit towards the end. On the other hand, it's not unusual in books of this, particularly historical books of this sort, that
that there is no real plot conclusion, is there?
It's as historical novels go, and the effect of big events on ordinary people. It fits very well into that genre. Liam Mills writes very well. The blurb, in Fallen, Liam Mills has produced a magnificent and enduring portrait of a young woman coming of age amidst violence and loss, and it does it
delivers
it
on that front.
Well. The world that she knows is turned upside down, everything, the values that she's had are gone, what she, her brother who she loved, he has obviously through his letters when he saw the war at first hand, he began to question all sorts of things, and she equally now questioning all these things that she's grown up with, and what will happen to her after that is anyone's guess.
So it's pretty typical of some of
Fallen. By Liam Mills. It's published by Penguin. And that's what I've been reading in the last week or two.
Well, thank you very much for that, Michael. I'm joined in the studio today by three young reviewers, Orca, Lauren and Josh. The three of them are here on Work Experience in Near FM, and I've asked them to help me out with a review of a new publication I got in the post. It's a Granuelle, Pirate Queen of Connacht, and it's published by O'Brien Press out there in Terranure. It's described as a graphic novel. It's in this form of like a comic book production, only it's a bit more bookish than that, but it involves David Hendrick, who is an Irish writer of comic book stories. He's been involved in previous works was The Symptoms and Short Sharp Schlocks, and he's also at the moment doing a comic book anthology for Pearl Jam. So he's a big name in the comic world. Also, Luca Pizzari, who's Italian, I'm sure you've guessed that by the name. He's a famous artist, actually, in the comic book world. He's a guy who fell in love with the Kubert brothers' art. His interest will be in the occult and pulp themes. And he's done the artwork in this graphic novel. And it really is. It's beautifully illustrated. It's called Granuelle, Queen of Storms, and the Granuelle we're talking about is Grace O'Malley, who was part Queen of Connacht and head of the O'Malley clan. She was born around 1530, daughter of a Gaelic chieftain. And they were a seafaring family. They used to trade a lot with Scotland and Spain. They would have really any industry involved in the sea, fishing, etc. But they also were pirates on the side. And apparently on the west coast of Ireland, any clans who had access to the boat in those days, come back to the 16th century, were involved in piracy. It was a pretty illegitimate act to be involved in. Yeah, Grania was, she's actually a great subject for an adventurous seafaring novel like this, as she was involved in all the sort of male activities of the day. Gaelic law would have spurned her being a female and, you know, assuming the role of chieftain or pirate, or actually being on a boat at all, as it was considered bad luck to have a woman on board. But she was the sort of tomboy of her chieftain clan family, and she done all of those things, and she even, you know, led raids on other clans, and had a couple of husbands, was divorced, had lovers. I mean, all the stuff, you know, that 19th or 20th century Ireland frowned upon, you know. She was back there in the 16th century paddling her own canoe and all these modes of behaviour. So, she's a very adventurous woman, but that's who's depicted in the novel. Anyway, I'd like to ask Orica, did you have a look at the novel? What did you think of it?
I really enjoyed seeing her portrayed this way, in like a sort of the artistry on the front of the cover, sort of like shows her as this tough, like,
it really
no
does,
nonsense woman. Yeah,
yeah, she's standing up there in the boat. I mean, it's like a determined figure, isn't she?
Yeah, with like the sword in hand and like that scowl on her face. Just look at her.
That's interesting. Tell me, did you like the artwork in the as you continue through the book?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of cross hatching and a lot of like shadows. It's really there. It's very prominent.
Is this typical of would you be a comic book? Would you have an interest in comic books for by this little project I've asked you to have a look at today?
Yeah, I've read a couple of comic books in my life, but I'm really big into manga as well. So
right, yeah. I've heard that about that.
So,
that
but the difference between comic and manga is quite wide. But comics are more sort of writing based than manga.
What about the story and how does that come across in this one? Granuel, Queen of the Storms, the little story captions. Is there enough of it?
Yeah, there are. There's they talk about a lot of things within the like they capture her whole life within these little speech bubbles, and they show her character and how she like.
Are you looking for much detail or what appeals to you? Is it short, snappy sentences? You know, action
sorta.
Descriptions.
Well, not really descriptions. I mean, the pictures should give you the descriptions. So, like, the way she acts and her face, facial expression, and how she looks at the others. That should be the description that like a normal book would not provide. So you actually get to see what it looks like, and then like the speech bubbles should be just like the way they're talking. It's like, you know, the way in a normal book you have like, you know, the parentheses, and then you have like the
talking.
So that's that
pronunciation and all to give you the dynamic of what's going on. Yeah,
yeah.
But here the graphics is doing that for you.
Yeah, it's great. It's really
just to let our listeners know, Orca's from Loretto School, Loretto Convent School in Balbriggan.
Yeah,
as is Lauren, and they've joined me here today with Josh, who's attends the Mount Temple on Malahide. I know anything with a couple of M's in it, I always sort of falter on. I have to reposition my mental image of the words. Josh, just while you've been the last one, how did you find found this novel, or not this graphic novel, did it appeal to you, Josh, when you first looked at it?
What I especially liked about it was, like I said, the cross hatching and all that with the black pen looks that they used. But everything kind of collides together, like the roughness of what they use with the black pen. They use a lot of it just to show kind of like the edges of everything and like the indents with it. And they don't, what I like about it is they don't leave anything to the imagination. Within the first two books, they literally have someone's hand being cut off and I think someone's neck being cut as well. So like they're really gruesome in it. And
I'd just like to say at this point that it isn't particularly aimed at children, this. My reviewers here are all in the 16 years of age bracket, give or take a month or two, or week or two in some people's cases. Happy birthday next week, Orga. But they're aimed at I suppose the graphic loving public, and that does really, when it boils down to it, you are talking about the younger generations. You're talking about people in the, you know, 14 to early 20s age group, you know. When you think of Planet what do you call that one on the keys? Forbidden Planet. There, I was going to say Planet Hollywood, which it isn't. Forbidden Planet's a great comic shop, and if anyone goes in there, they'd see that, you know, that would be the age group of the customers, you know, from 14 to mid 20s, you know. And I suppose that's what this book is aiming at. What about story, Josh? Are you looking for much of a story? What?
Personally, I wouldn't be the one to know a lot about Irish history.
Oh, really?
Pirates, like that.
Yeah.
But her story is quite gruesome and complicated and kind of raw as well. Like, I think there's one point in it, I was flicking through it, and there's one point in it where there's some explosion at the mountain. I think it looks like it's a volcano, but I think it's a fire, more of an explosion.
Is that her castle, yeah?
They explode the castle.
Yeah.
And then moments later, there's...
Josh is just referring to the fact that... in the presentation of the graphics, they don't hold back from a bit of blood and gore and that sort of explicit action. Anyway, tell us, Lauren, what about you? What did you think of? Do comic graphic novels appeal to you?
No, I've never really been into graphics, actually.
Right.
Or comics.
So what about this? It's your if you take it as your first experience, what? What sort of impact did it have on you? How did you feel about it when you looked at it?
The storyline is really good. Like, it's really powerful, like, historically. And, like, her life is just, like, very interesting to read about.
It's fascinating. I didn't actually know anything about her, really. I did hear the name Grace O'Malley mentioned in some sort of historical context, but I couldn't tell you any detail about it until I actually Googled her up. And she is, I mean, wow, what a force of a woman.
Yeah.
When she, you know, pirate, you know, she would have been out there, I suppose, doing raiding. I mean, the old clans, when we go back to those times, used to do raids on each other to steal cattle and sheep and whatnot. And she would have been there with it, you know, spear in hand.
Yeah, she doesn't hold back.
No, she doesn't hold back. The colouring, colour schemes used in it, and is that quality? Josh, would you know about that?
Well, you see when you flick between the scenes, if the main colour would be, for example, blue, all the other images would be kind of cool and all that, and they would suit all those colours. And just flicking between it, there's like little different scenes. Like for a battle scene, it would be more fire, it would be red, it would be orange, like that. And for things that are in the dark, everything's a bit kind of black.
Gloomy.
Everything's gloomy and darker. And you even have on the edges where the pictures aren't in the background, it's black in here, which really shows that it's night, which is a really good effect on it.
Right. So the this is an education for myself because, as I said, my reviewers here are they're more in line with the sort of expectancy, you know, that this book delivers. And it's an education for me in the sense that of them talking about the colours and how the colours provide atmosphere to the experience of reading the story that, you know, the basically skeletal story of a comic book. The story title is Granuelle, Queen of Storms. And tell me, gang, guest reviewers, does it get a thumbs up?
Yeah, I liked it.
It does
give a good sense of the past.
There we go. So it does get thumbs up from our gang here. I'd just like to thank them again for being so good to come and sit in and give me that review of the comic. There isn't a lot you can say about a graphic novel apart from either the experience was positive or negative. You know, you liked it or you hated it, or you know, and just have certainly done that. Thanks very much, Orica and Lauren from Balbriggan and Loretto Convent, and Josh from Mount Temple on the Malahide Road. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you. I'm joined on the line now by Bob Johnston, who is chair of the Irish Booksellers Association. Or is it just the Booksellers Association, Bob?
Yeah, officially Booksellers Association Irish branch, because we have colleagues throughout the UK as well. But yeah, I'm chairing up the Booksellers Association for Ireland. So I look after basically the Irish bookshops, make sure everybody's okay and do our best for
them. Bob is on the line here to talk about World Book Day, but Irish World Book Day, which is, what date is that, Bob?
It's on this day. It's always the first Thursday in March. So this year it's Thursday, the 5th of March. So we're just coming up to it now, and the excitement has started. So, you know, for those of people who aren't aware of World Book Day,
could you tell us what is World Book Day, Bob?
Well, it's an initiative that started, I think we're in about year 17 or something crazy now, but it was an initiative to start to encourage children to go into bookshops and to read books, basically. So the heart of the campaign is that every primary school child in Ireland, through their school, receives a €1.50 World Book Day voucher,
right,
which they can then take down to their local bookshop,
uh-huh,
and exchange that voucher either for any book of their choosing, they just get €1.50 off, or their special World Book Day books, which cost €1.50. So effectively,
right,
they get a free book for World Book Day. And that goes out, a voucher goes out to every primary school child in Ireland through their school. So it's a real initiative, really, to encourage children to visit a bookshop, see what bookshops are about, but also to pick up a book and take a book home with them that they can then read and enjoy.
Do you find that's the big thing, Bob, with reading it? It's to get people to take that initial bite into the pleasure.
Yeah, it is, definitely. You know, there's huge swathes of research that have gone in to show that, you know, children who are reading when they're young and who are reading books specifically go on to, you know, greater attainment in education, and, you know, it brings in a whole load of schools. And so really, you know, it is about just trying to encourage people to read and encourage them to kind of engage with books.
Right. And I know that psychologists and doctors of all sorts of disciplines going towards neurosciences would encourage even elder adults very much so to keep reading so as to sharpen their cognitive abilities going into their older years, you know.
Definitely. I mean, World Book Day is specifically aimed at kind of children, but from teeny tinies to guys in their 90s, you know, reading is actually such a good thing for the brain, and it's also a great stress buster. They've done lots of things that even if you read for 20 minutes a day, it reduces your stress levels by half. There's something about the engagement that we have with reading that allows our brains to focus away from the day-to-day. It takes you somewhere else. And that is incredibly good for your brain. So much more than TV or movies or computer games or whatever, reading a book is actually very good for your mental health. So, you know, it is important to install that in children when they're young. And so that's why, you know, World Book Day is such a big event. And it just grows and grows year on year, you know. It's always great fun. There's always lots going on. Schools do dress up as your favourite character days, and local bookshops have readings and authors down and all kinds of stuff going on. It's just a really nice day to kind of celebrate books.
Are you getting a good response from the schools?
Oh, yeah. The schools are always very enthusiastic because, you know, it keys into exactly, you know, all the things they're trying to teach kids around, you know, how important it is to engage. So no, schools are always on board. We do always say to schools to make sure you have those vouchers, keep them somewhere safe, and then make sure you give them out to the kids in the run up to World Book Day so that they can pop down and visit their local bookshops. A lot of schools actually organise school trips out, like class trips, just to pop down into their local bookshop to specifically pick up their World Book Day book. You'll be quietly stood there in your bookshop just twiddling your thumbs, and then suddenly an onslaught of 60 young children all desperate to buy a book. I mean, what more could anybody want for it? Really?
My goodness. Tell me, Bob, is it a one-day event, or is it a bit of a festival?
The World Book Day vouchers themselves are valid from sort of a few days leading up to World Book Day for about a few weeks afterwards. So you have about a month to use the voucher. Now, obviously, there's a lot focused on World Book Day itself. That's the day we really try and celebrate, because obviously with these things, you want to get people talking. Yeah. We have a Facebook page, you know, World Book Day Ireland, and we have a Twitter account, WBD Ireland, and, you know, you have Facebook, Twitter, all kinds of things going on. So it's really, you know, to get these things trending, to get people talking about it. And as ever, you know, that's the important thing. And it's great you ask us on to things like this to talk about it, because, you know, getting the word out there is really important.
Absolutely. So if people are looking for some information regarding World Book Day, they can catch you on Facebook.
Us through Facebook, through Twitter, etc. The main site is just worldbookday.com, so people can just log on to the worldbookday.com.
So if anybody Googles that,
There's loads of stuff to download there. There's activity sheets, you know, there's information about the books, there's TV, there's a link in to the biggest book show. So there's stacks going on the website. So anybody who wants some ideas or some information, there's loads of stuff on there. And if you go down to the bottom of the page, there's a specific area there for World Book Day Ireland. So if you want to specifically know about all the stuff that's going on in Ireland, we even have a special book just for Ireland, which O'Brien Press do every year, which is fantastic. So, you know, if you want books specifically for Ireland, scroll down to the bottom there, click on World Book Day Ireland, and then that'll take you through to give you all the information that we've got for this year. But worldbookday.com is your first stop shop for all things booky around World Book Day.
That's fantastic, Bob. So it does sound it sounds really interesting. So it does, especially getting, you know, for the kids to encourage them. You know, it sounds a really good initiative. Yeah.
Yeah, and kids love it. You know, kids absolutely adore it. I mean, how exciting is it to get a voucher for a free book? You know,
that's
you go and pick yourself a free book. I think I could do with some of those, to be honest.
Funny, just when you're talking about the effect of the reading has with regard to stress levels, I took the plunge and give up smoking just about 4 weeks ago now, and I find that when I'm really feeling the pinch, if I pick up the novel I'm reading at the moment, and after a page or two, I'm lost in the book rather than concentrating on, you know, avoiding smoking or resisting temptation, you know. So it really does work,
fantastic.
You know.
I've never heard that. I could see a great new ploy for marketing books as a good way of giving up smoking. Well, there we are. I can work that one perfectly. Well, it's amazing what it does to your brain, I think. You know, reading a book like that, you do lose yourself in somebody else's life. You know, there's a lot of research. Again, if people who read a lot of fiction have greater senses of empathy with other people, because they put themselves in somebody's shoes constantly through reading a book.
Goodness.
So it's a really interesting. I'm always fascinated by what reading does.
I suppose,
to our
brains. When you say
it's so positive.
When you're talking about, you know, putting yourself in somebody's other boots, you really are releasing yourself from the constraints of your own experience, aren't you?
Exactly. Yeah. I always say it's the cheapest way to travel the world, read a book, and you just get taken away completely, you know? And it's so good for you just to leave those day-to-day stresses behind.
Well, this is cover to cover. It is Near FM's book review show, and we do talk about all things bookish. What about yourself, Bob? Have you a favourite author? you like to share with us?
Oh, God, a bookseller's dreaded question.
Is it really?
What's your favourite book? Who's your favourite author? I have to be honest, well, it varies and it changes, and I can start listing books that I adore. There's a lady called Anne Tyler who's best known for doing a book called The Accidental Tourist years ago.
Yes, that's a famous title.
She's amazing, and talking about empathy, she is just brilliant at dissecting relationships and families and how they work and how people interact. She's just a stunning writer. You know, one of those people you just can't stop reading. She has a new book out called A Spool of Blue Thread, which literally just coming out kind of this now. And I've read it and it's amazing. Just about, you know, an older couple who have lived their lives together, brought up their children, and then you know, one of the children and their family end up moving back in with them, and it's
my
the
strain goodness
that puts on everybody. So
that has a particular relevance to our contemporary situation, hasn't it? With
lots of people moving back in with their parents, their slightly older parents, due to, you know, constraints and whatever. And you know, everybody knows how challenging that can be, how wonderful it can be as well. Let's not be negative. How wonderful that can be. But also it does present challenges to lots of grown-ups living in the same house together. Anne Tyler, one of my favourite authors. But as I say, I could start listing all the books that I've read recently that I've loved, and you'd be here all day. What bookshops are great for, you know. Bookshops are great for recommending something that you don't know about, for all the power of the internet. You know, there's nothing like going into a bookshop and somebody saying, you know, you have to read this. This is amazing.
Right,
You know, I think that's why so many bookshops are still surviving and still doing well, is because for all the power of the internet, they can't replicate that human-to-human factor.
Yeah, yeah. Tell us, Bob, you're also the owner of the Gutter Bookshop in Temple Bar. Tell us a little bit about that, because I see there's lots of activities going on there. I happen to have it on the old, I Googled it, and you have all sorts of reading groups. I mean, quite a variety of age targeted reading groups, haven't you? Or tell us a little bit about Gutter Shop.
We always have stacks going on in the gutter. It's one of those, again, you know, bookshops are more like community centres in a way now. You know, you have readings, you have book groups, you have kids' activity events and story time. You know, a lot of bookshops are engaging with their local communities because, again, you know, with the internet out there, you need to offer something more, something different. So, yeah, we actually have two gutter bookshops now. We have one down in Temple Bar in the middle of Dublin, and we have one out in Dalkey in South County Dublin as well, which we opened up a year ago. So we have the two bookshops now, completely independent and doing very well. You know, for all the doom and gloom, they're very happy and chugging along nicely. The first one's been open 5 years. Second one's been open a year. I always think we get caught up in this cycle of negativity of like nothing can survive, and they can. You know, they're doing well, and people are very supportive. Doing the events and the book groups, you know, doing things to bring people in to the bookshops is always very important. And I always say, again, with my, you know, Booksellers Association, where I look after all of the bookshops across Ireland, is, you know, do go and visit your local bookshop. Go and get involved in stuff, you know, and see what they're up to.
Yeah.
They need your support. And if you want to keep them, you know, there in your town as a resource, then you need to use them. So, you know, I'd always say to people, get out there and pay them a visit. And World Book Day is a fantastic opportunity to do that. If you've got kids, you know, take them down to the bookshop, get them to pick their book up.
Yeah, Bob. Yeah, with your involvement in the Gutter Bookshop, you've obviously been involved in the Irish literary world for you have some experience there. You've been here some time. How would you judge the quality and the state of emerging writers in Ireland at the moment? Would you have an opinion to share with us?
Yeah, I mean, I think everybody always knows that, you know, for a small population. Ireland's writers always punch above their weight. You know, we have so many fantastic writers coming out of Ireland, and we always hark back to that idea, you know, as born storytellers. But really, they are. You know, you think of everybody from Maeve Binchy and Cathy Kelly through to, you know, the literary giants like Colm Tabeen and Sebastian Barry.
Yeah.
And then you've got, you know, emerging new writers. I just read a book by a lady called Sarah Baum, who has just released her first novel. She won the Davy Byrne Short Story Prize, and that's amazing. And Colin Barrett, another great short story writer, You know, so there's a wealth of talent out there. And what is great about Ireland is that they seem to be making their way through. You know, we seem to have these emerging talents. It's a very supportive industry, right, from the bookshops across to the Irish publishers, to the Irish author organisations, places like the Irish Writers' Centre. It's a very supportive environment to try to encourage these people to do the best that they can. And it's fantastic to see, you know. It's always so exciting, I think, the Irish literary scene. There's always so much going on. And then, of course, crime writing. We know that there's a load of Irish crime writers out there now as well who, you know, they're Celtic noir kind of, you know, that is also incredibly popular.
Just recently featured a new young talent, Jonathan Dunne, is a book out, The Takeover. It's about a crime family in Dublin. And it was pretty entertaining now for first effort, you know. First effort in that genre. Yeah. He has two novels out. He had one previous to that. But, I mean, I'm pleasantly surprised myself. I've recently just come to this position of presenting and producing the cover-to-cover show, and it is surprising for, as you say, for the small population we have, you know, the quality of the storytelling, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's always amazing when you look at, you know, things like the Man Booker Prize or the Folio Prize or whichever prize you look at, there's always one or two Irish authors in there, you know, and we come to expect it in a way, and then you suddenly realise for a small country with a fairly small population, you're up there against the US and against the UK, but there's always Irish writers in there, and it just goes to show, really, you know, how talented our scene is and how supportive it needs to be to keep those people, you know, and finding new talent is always so important, and you know, keeping it going and encouraging it. So no, I do. I've worked in bookselling for most of my life, for the last 25 years or so, and I love it. You know, I wouldn't do anything else.
Tell me, Bob,
world to be in.
Probing question here: have you ever been tempted to put the pen to paper yourself?
Yes. Yeah, I think they always say behind every bookseller is a failed novelist. Really? Or something.
But I've never heard that before.
Exactly. You can't be involved in that world and not want to give it a shot, don't think. But I have actually. There was a period I went away for, but I came back to Ireland about 8-9 years ago.
Where are you originally from, Bob? Sorry to interject there.
No, I grew up, I was born down in Brighton in the UK, just near London in the UK, and then I came to Dublin for the weekend 15 years ago, so there you are.
It's the way it happens, isn't it? I'm not a native
and
myself.
And I wouldn't be anywhere else, it has to be
That's a fine accommodation. Bob, thank you very much for coming on the show and telling us so much about the book industry in general, and especially about World Book Day.
You're very welcome. And as I say, World Book Day is just one of those great days to celebrate. So, yeah, just get people out onto worldbookday.com, have a look, see what's going on and get involved. It's always a good thing.
Sorry, Bob, just before I cut you off just when you were telling me about your own attempts at the writing art. Would you like to take that up again where you left off? You were saying behind every bookseller is an aspiring, well, not call it a fable, you say an aspiring writer.
We'll call it a fan novice, aspiring novice. No, I mean, I think, you know, like everybody, I think you want to give it a shot and see if you can do it. And so I did. I was when I moved back to Ireland about 8-9 years ago after a little bit of being away, I was out of work for a while, so I had some time on my hands, so I started writing. And I think the thing that it taught me, that writing a book is not easy, you know.
Right.
It's hard graft, and even, you know, if you think a standard novel is a good, you know, 140,000 words long, that's a lot of words to write on a piece of paper, even if you have them all in your head to start with, you know. It's a hard slog to get that work out there. So, you know, it's almost, I always say, it's like running a marathon. You know, you've got to, you're looking at, even if you write, you know, 1,000 words a day, that's 140 days of constant writing that you've got to do half a year of writing. You know, it's hard physically, never mind about mentally, you know, to get those words. So I'm full of admiration for anybody that actually manages to get a novel written, whether they get it picked up by a big publisher or they publish it themselves, or even if it sits in a drawer somewhere. I always think, fair play to you. If you can do something beginning to end like that, then you've achieved something in yourself. So, yeah, you know, it's a good way of learning how hard it is to write a book, I think, to try writing.
Actually try to have it, you know. You're right there, yeah. Bob. I mean, we can all be great armchair critics, but the one way to test your mettle is, you know, get into the water yourself and see how difficult it is
exactly.
to swim. You know,
exactly. And that's it. You've got to learn exactly how hard it is to it before you really appreciate it. So.
Bob, once again, that's Bob Johnson. He's chairman of the Booksellers Association, and he's very involved in operating this World Book Day, which is, give us the date again, Bob, please.
It's on Thursday, the 5th of March this year. Thursday in March.
Yeah, and he's also, are you the proprietor of the Gutter Bookshops, Bob?
Yes. Owner of the Gutter Bookshop owner of the Gutter's in Bookshops Temple Bar and in Dalkey.
Thank you very much for your time, for coming on today.
You're
and,
very welcome.
Sharing your valuable time. I'm sure you're under pressure.
As ever, but that's a good way. A busy bookseller is a happy bookseller. That's what I say.
thank you very much, Rob. Thank you.
Thanks a lot. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye. Well, that's all we have time for on this week's show. I'll be back again in 2 weeks, but don't miss Writer's Block next week with Morgan O'Reilly at the very same time. And Morgan will be... he'll be looking at a project coordinated by Fighting Words in the Abbey Theatre, which gives young playwrights the opportunity to have their own work read on the Peacock stage. Morgan will be in with them in the Fighting Words premises in Russell Street to meet the playwrights and the volunteers who work with them, and some of the Fighting Words staff, so that'll be interesting. It just leaves me to thank all who contributed to today's show. Michael Sharp and the kids, Orca, Lauren and Josh. They were great fun and a pleasure having them in the studio. And a big thanks to Bob Johnston, the owner of the Gutter Bookshops in Dalkey and in Temple Bar, and who was talking about World Book Day, which is on the 5th of March. Don't forget about that, very important. Thank you all very much for listening to me today and to the show. This is Joe Collins at Cover to Cover, Near FM on 80.3, your community radio station. Thanking you and wishing you goodbye and all the best.